This programming is sponsored by Linscombe Wealth, a wealth management firm partnering with individuals and families dedicated to helping them build, preserve, and manage wealth by creating a customized plan to work toward achieving their goals. More at linscombewealth.com.
Welcome to Party Politics. I'm Jeronimo Cortina, political scientist and associate director at the Center for Mexican American Studies at the University of Houston.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse, a political science professor at the University of Houston. Thanks for hanging out with us and talking politics. We hope you're safe. We hope you're warm. We hope you've got water because it has been a real slog this week. But Jeronimo, in addition to being political scientists and, you know, just all around good people, we are also now virologists from a year of COVID. We're also now energy experts from having suffered through yet another calamity to the state, not the least of which was that J.J. Watt this week, the heart and soul of the Houston Texans, is leaving. So are we being punished for our misdeeds with J.J. Watt? Is that why this is happening to us, Jeronimo?
I don't know. I think, as you say, we hope that everyone is safe and sound and hanging there. Everyone has been either without water or electricity or both or one or the other coming back. So, I mean, it just illustrates that 2021 is going to be the same as 2020. Like, you cannot go out. You have to remain home. But now 2021 decided to test our survival skills.
Exactly, right?
So he stayed home, but with survival skills.
Yeah, exactly right. And now we all know how to turn off the water to our houses and flush the toilets with water. And we've been through hurricanes before. This is bizarre. I heard somebody say that if 2020 was like hell, then 2021 is like hell freezes over. So here we are. Right.
Exactly.
Struggling. Exactly. We're going to talk all about what happened and why, maybe the political fallout from this too. But let's talk about some national issues because some interesting things happened this week. The first is that, kind of a sad note, that Rush Limbaugh has passed away. Well, obviously, if you don't know who Rush Limbaugh is, just a quick recap, he was fundamentally the most famous radio talk show host, really pioneered that, died of lung cancer this week at the age of 70. Obviously, it's a mixed history, right? He was really, in modern political conservatism, the North Star. He founded a right-wing media ecosystem. And basically, we have the politics of today, the friction and the kind of dysfunction in large part because of this. Not, that's all his fault, but he really incubated this. So what's Limbaugh's legacy on the national scene?
Well, I think, it depends on which side of the aisle you're going to land, right?
Again, yeah.
For progressives, I mean, it's just the incarnation of evil one way or the other. For more conservatives, is, the right voice, as you said, the North Star. But I think that Rush Limbaugh has very interesting history. And it is right after the Reagan administration set aside the Fairness Doctrine, in which you are or were instructed, quote unquote, to present opposing views on a controversial issue. Limbaugh said, well, we don't have to do this thing. And they saw, this market opportunity, not only in terms of money, but also in terms of advancing a political ideology. And he changed that. He basically, it's a realignment of what we have right now in terms of mass media communication.
Yeah. Yeah. And he really did sort of design this outrage entertainment system to be able to really enhance this political culture wars we're currently fighting. So it's definitely going to be a mixed legacy. It's a part of the reason why Donald Trump became president. And we're going to see the impact of this for generations, right? Because politically, it's been that prevalent. Well, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what's going on in Washington beyond this. This week, Joe Biden did a town hall, his first kind of public town hall appearance, in which he advocated for a couple of things and also kind of backtracked on some things. So in one, he said he had basically reaffirmed his commitment to a $15 minimum wage. And the other, he said that he was willing to entertain the notion of a $10,000 student debt write-off, but not a $50,000 student debt write-off. So what do you make of where he's positioning himself politically on all this?
Well, I mean, it's going to be tricky, right? On the one hand, the 15 minimum wage push has, or it's going to be received in terms of short-term, medium-term, and long-term consequences. Mm-hmm. The Congressional Budget Office reported that, you know, if you implement that, it's going to have an initial impact of around 1.4 million people are going to lose their jobs, but it's going to lift another 900,000 out of poverty. And in the long term, those people, as they get incorporated into the economy, they're going to start generating more. They're going to start be able to buy more, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's going to be with a mixed feeling. Certainly small businesses in his town hall, there were people from both sides of the aisle, and he was hammered. And I think that's a good thing. But they asked him, why should we do this thing? We don't have money. So I guess it's going to be important in terms of dividing short-term, medium-term, and long-term consequences of these potential move.
Yeah, and it's complicated even more so by the fact that they'd like to put the $15 minimum wage bill into the reconciliation bill, but it's not clear they've got support from that because even, you know, Senator Kristen Sinema from Arizona has said that she's not really on board with that. So they're going to have to negotiate through that. But you've got, though, a pretty significant growth of the kind of liberal wing of the Democratic Party emerging. So people like Chuck Schumer, people like Elizabeth Warren are really going to bat for this, but also for the debt relief, right? So although Joe Biden hasn't really committed to it, the Democratic lawmakers this week also introduced a measure to basically call on the government to fund this $50,000 federal help for student debt borrowers, saying, you know, it basically brings people out of poverty and the cycle continues where, you know, you can't buy a house, you're often living with parents, and the parents then have to pay the debt or help pay the debt.
Right.
So it pauses their retirement. So there's a kind of trickle effect economically that can create problems. So I'm just interested in this because we'll see how far the left wing is going to go, and we'll see how far Joe Biden will go to meet them, right? Because, you know, it's pretty lonely in the middle right now. And, you know, Joe Biden's trying to find that rhythm. So this will help us to kind of triangulate exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
Another big news this week, though, is something that definitely is going to shake up the dust of Washington and the snow off of your tires. And that is that you've got an immigration bill that the president has tacitly backed, introduced by Bob Menendez from New Jersey and Linda Sanchez from California. So what's going on there?
Well, it's going to be, you know, the first shot in this type of negotiation. Remember, first of all,
usually the immigration shot is like just the death shot, the kill shot, right? Like you introduce it and it dies.
Maybe, right? I think there's, so far what I've been reading is that Lindsey Graham that supported, for example, DACA related legislation, the Gang of Eight back in the early 2000s or mid 2000s in terms of proposing some sort of immigration reform. It was a bipartisan Gang of Eight, so on and so forth. I mean, I think that people need to address this thing. So far, what I've been hearing and listening is, okay, this is the appetizer, right? The meal is not done. Now let's see what we have in the menu, and we can decide and see if we can move forward. And basically, it establishes, to a certain extent, once again, moving and raising the per county caps on family and employment-based legal immigration numbers. It also is going to replace, for example, some subtleties like replacing the word alien with non-citizen.
Right.
And then the most high or important thing is that it establishes a potential 8-year path to citizenship for undocumented migrants who are arriving in the U.S. by January 1st. So it's there. I think that the problem is with a path to citizenship that people are going to be opposed. But again, it would have been just important to say path to legal residency, right?
Yeah.
And then leave everything else.
Citizenship.
No. Just leave it there. Once you're a resident, right?
Yeah.
You can decide if you become or not become a U.S. citizen, right?
Yeah, okay.
That's it. You can work, you can do everything. The only thing that you can do is vote. And I think that's the real problem. And the last thing that I don't see is that it's going to expand once again these issues of anti-drug task forces in Central America here and there. But there is not significant investment in terms of generating development in home countries. And people migrate for two reasons. One is going to be the pull factors, those factors that pull people to the U.S. and then push factors. So what you want to control, right? You don't have control over the push factors, and you want to help national governments to control those things. And that can only be done through investment and development. And there you go. That would be the perfect combination. And I don't see a lot of that into this law.
Yeah. And, you know, Texas is doing its part to stem the poll factors by not having electricity or water or, you know, functioning government, basically all of those things, right? So right. We're doing our part.
Right. Exactly.
If that's what you're looking for.
Exactly.
Maybe that's the design. I think your analogy about the food is interesting because it's how I run a dinner party. Like you start making the appetizers and then, yeah, we'll plan the main course like after that, right? But that might be complicated because pushing too much on the agenda can be troublesome, right? Especially on this issue that's been so fraught with the, you know, kind of backtracking and kind of lack of bipartisan commitment. So, I mean, the question is really, can the Democrats get the 10 Republicans they need to back that? It's unclear. And that's really going to be the issue, right? Because those 10 Republicans, if they vote for it, will be extremely vulnerable in the next election they face. So as much as Trump divides, that's going to be the big divide.
I understand. But if you coach the legislation in such a way that it would give them political cover, I think that that's a way that you can basically save the day here and come up with something. But again, I think that if you want to solve this issue in the long term, you have to really set your or aim at trying to fix what's going on or try to help fixing what's going on in developing countries. Mm. And that would have a better situation in the long term. So we'll see what happens. But anyways, you know, the Senate and numbers, you were talking about numbers, et cetera, and then boom, impeachment once again, right? So we saw some movement. So tell us, you know, in 10 seconds, what happened?
Not guilty, I guess, is the short right. answer. The longer answer is that basically the Senate has decided that the former president is not guilty as charged in the article of impeachment. The vote was 57 to 43. 7 Republicans back the Democrats' effort to convict the president, but obviously it wasn't enough. This is obviously, you know, an ongoing question, right? There are lots of different sort of interactions. You still have Trump as being really popular in the Republican Party. You saw this week, you know, Kevin McCarthy go there. Steve Scalise went to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring and, you know, get the kind of support from the president. But it definitely is, I think, a positive thing for the president, right? So he can kind of say this was politically motivated more or less, and then kind of work on, you know, beating the folks who were against him. It doesn't solve the divide within the Republican Party. I think Democrats are still unified and they can back Joe Biden, but Republicans are distracted and that distraction can lead to more divisions. So in terms of challenging the things we just talked about, right, you're talking about, you know, taxes, immigration policy, these things are all going to be compromised if the Republicans let this divide them. But it's not the end for Donald Trump, right? I mean, he still has criminal charges to face in a couple of different venues. There are still outstanding questions in Georgia about whether or not he influenced the Secretary of State by asking him to find 11,000 plus votes. So for Donald Trump, I think that the crisis is just beginning. And for the Republican Party, it still remains.
Right. Especially when you introduce now the clear war between Mitch McConnell, Senator Mitch McConnell and President Trump, right? And what you're illustrating is very important because Trump has $60 million ready, right, to push his candidates in the primaries.
Burning and a hole in his pocket, right? Like he cannot wait to unleash this.
And he has been very successful at pushing his candidates and, you know, endorsing people that have won the primary cycle, right? His success rate is over 95%, and that's brutally very important. So we'll see once again what happens. But again, the issue is, you know, what is the Republican Party going to do? Are they going to create another party? Are they going to create a different party? I don't know, man. Right. I mean, it's just all over the way. You have, as you said, McCarthy going to Florida. Obviously, McConnell cannot go to Florida at all.
Not welcome at Mar-a-Lago now.
Right.
And as you say, actually, there was a pretty brutal attack from Trump on McConnell. Now, McConnell is objectively the reason Trump was so successful, right? I mean, the judges alone was one thing, but basically holding the line in the Senate was something that nobody could have done except for Mitch McConnell. So surprising to see them break up so publicly, but it was pretty nasty, right? Trump calls Mitch, he says, Mitch, a dour, sullen, unsmiling political hack. And apparently this was the nice version of it because the more harsh version included a mocking of the senator's multiple chins. So it got pretty personal pretty fast in true Trump fashion. But as you say, I mean, the kind of cannibalism in the Republican Party is really just hurting their ability to rally around any kind of support to move forward with a single person or to try to challenge the Dems. on this legislation, which is going to be really the coin of the realm for them. So we will have to wait and see how that plays out. But let's talk Texas, because we have, you know, our own share of problems here, including the attorney general, who this week court filings suggest may have swapped political favors for a home remodel and a job for his alleged mistress. So what do you make of this? I mean, these are all swirling rumors. Many of them have been sort of teased, but never kind of formalized. But this is now an official court document making these claims. So is this kind of a slow drip that's going to hurt Paxton, or is he going to find a way to get out of it?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a slow trip. I mean, and using the analogies, you know, the ice is going to melt and then everything is going to be discovered.
No more pole analogies. We need only hot analogies.
Okay. Right. True. So, I mean, it's going to be clear, right? If it's a court document, it's under investigation for a number of things. I lost track, to tell you the truth. Right. So if this is true, is he just not going to be able to win re-election? As simple as that, I think.
He could get, inside the party challenge. He could get and will get definitely some pretty strong challenge from Democrats, as we already know. So it's definitely going to be the most watched battle in Texas. But obviously, with all that's happening, every official in Texas is potentially vulnerable. Maybe not right away, but Ted Cruz has developed some controversy for two things this week. The first is that he got what looks like a kind of a really bizarre haircut, what the Houston Chronicle reports as being a sporting of a mullet out of the hot blue nowhere. Not a great look, to be honest.
No.
And then it turns out that he went to Cancun for a vacation during the time where Texas was literally frozen. So is this going to hurt Ted Cruz, or is this just kind of another indexing into why, like, progressives hate him and the, you know, kind of Republicans love him?
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what to think of it, right? I mean, just let's have a little bit of contrast, right? We have Fort Bend County's judge, KP George, that has been on Twitter. He has been without power, no light. Obviously, one of his pipes bursting in his home, so on and so forth. He's right there. While the junior senator of Texas decides to go to Cancun. I mean, I know it's different positions, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, maybe Judge George could have gone to Cancun as well.
Exactly right. But he chose to stay at the helm. I'll do you one better, actually. If you haven't heard this, you have to look it up. The mayor of Colorado City, I guess we should say former mayor of Colorado City, for reasons I'll disclose in a second, is under fire for posting on Facebook that, quote, only the strong will survive and the weak will perish. So this is not a great way to get reelected, even in Texas. There is a longer screed about how local governments don't owe you anything and how this is basically, you know, your own, you know, kind of you're on your own to make these things happen. But probably not the posture you want when your constituents are freezing to death and where there are tremendous economic implications to the kind of frustration that we've all experienced this week. So,
and that's, but that's, it's Colorado City, Texas.
Correct.
For those that may not be paying a lot of attention, it's here in Texas, just FYI.
It's in Texas, where we have our own energy grid, which sounds like a great plan until things go horribly wrong. So part of the reason this happened was that the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, we should probably think about taking out that R because reliability has not been their strong suit. They're overseen by the Public Utility Commission and the legislature. They effectively this week, because of the winter conditions, were unable to produce the kind of energy that they needed. We won't get into all the details, but suffice it to say that there hadn't been enough winterization of the equipment and it wasn't generating enough power for everybody in Texas to have power. So you had either rolling blackouts or simply no power at all. That combined with the fact that many cities were finding, as we mentioned just a moment ago, that people had broken pipes or there was freezing. And so the water pressure was low and people aren't able to get water. So it was basically just a full-on kind of chaos, Lord of the Rings style situation, like a movie where you have to fight a bear at the end of it. So not a great look for Texas.
And the other one, right? The other movie, the Lord of the Flies as well?
Yes, exactly. Lord of the Flies, not Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Maybe Lord of the Rings too, to some degree. I didn't see a lot of small creatures roaming around, but you know, I didn't go outside because it was too blasted cold, right? Okay, so let me get your take on this. Okay, so you have Republicans basically saying the Green New Deal is to blame. Greg Abbott goes on Fox News saying this. And what would happen effectively is that this is going to make things worse if we pursue these sort of renewable resources. Democrats push back and say, renewables are just sort of part of this. It was really the problem of the more thermal resources like oil and gas that was the crisis. And they weren't winterized properly. And that's your fault, Republicans who've been in power for 10 years. So what do you think of this? And how is the kind of political back and forth going to create any kind of movement on making this better?
Well, I mean, we already had this, right? 5 years ago, Democrats introduced legislation, state legislature, to make utilities to winterize and be prepared for these changes, right, in climate and all these very important things. Obviously, a bunch of Republicans did not support the bill, and obviously the bill did not pass because, you know, the state legislature is controlled by the Republican Party. And that's just what it is. It's the rules of the game. Their mind's going to be changing nowadays? I think so.
I think so, yeah.
And I think that they need to take responsibility. And it's going to be extremely important to take responsibility. You cannot make this thing a political hack. I mean, it's going to be extremely, extremely important. And people are not dumb, right? I mean, people are going to realize that. And let's just, once again, put the facts together. And the facts together is that, you know, the state relies, especially in winter, when in West Texas, wind production tends to be lower because of whatever it is, as your friendly meteorologist or whatever friend or something like that. Don't ask me.
And we're weather experts too now. Yeah.
Right, exactly. In addition to being biologists. They're just responsible, especially in the wind, for around 7% of the state's energy generation, right? So you have 93%. If you want to blame parts, okay, wind and renewables are 7% at fault. Oil and gas, et cetera, et cetera, are 93% at fault. And the problem is that in your house pipes and everything, if you don't put the towel, then the plastic bag, then the duct tape, the thing freezes. And that's what happened. These things froze, period.
And we're plumbers now, too. I need that help. Actually, I needed that help like last week. So,
oh man, oh well, you should have come to me. I mean,
I should have.
Finally, YouTube. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, like YouTube is very helpful on these matters. Right. But sometimes what is not helpful is the partisan politics that's involved in this. And so, I'm going to talk about what Governor Abbott did or didn't do. So he basically initially kind of threw ERCOT under the bus, saying this is unacceptable. There needs to be, some serious look at this. People need to be fired or resign if things are kind of work out as he expects them to. The governor is really engaging in a kind of code switch in national versus local TV. I think because nationally, he's got ambitions. He wants to make sure that his brand is still pretty strong. And if the brand of Texas is that we're unique, we're independent, we can do it ourselves, and the U.S. can too, it really takes a hit when your whole country, you know, of Texas is basically had no power and is frozen. So I think it's a real challenge for Greg Abbott to maintain a kind of political momentum he needs nationally, not just for his own personal benefit, like politically, but also for recruiting businesses to come to Texas. Like, what industry is going to want to move to Texas if it looks like our grid is failing, like our foster care system is broken, you know, our public schools are underfunded. So it's a real crisis that, you know, Abbott's going to confront politically, but also financially, I think, for a lot of us.
And the big question, right? The big question is, does common sense regulation really that bad?
Yeah.
Because, you know, regulation has become the boogeyman, right?
You're
not going to regulate this, you're not going to regulate that. But, you know, sometimes I think a little bit of regulation or a little bit of heads up, the thing is coming. Because, I mean, there's going to be an investigation, right? Yeah. And I think, I mean, I remember everyone knew that this thing was coming 10 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and you used the R word multiple times. I think we're going to get one of those E ratings, right? Like where Republicans are going to say, you know, you've gone too far, regulation. But realistically, I think you're going to see Republicans buy into this because they're committed to, you know, trying to figure out what happened. Their constituents were as affected as everybody. So you're going to start to see, I think, a lot of people wake up to say, we need to do something about this. And it's a risk to play politics when these things unfold, right? The negative ads fundamentally right themselves. In fact, looking at some interesting work on blame deflection and blame avoidance, what some of the strategies suggest is that basically for leaders who stop the buck and who take responsibility and sort of move on, you know, to big solutions, they're better off. They have a better rally moment from both Republicans and Democrats. They are increased public confidence in their handling of their jobs, and they also increase perceptions of their own character. So it's worth the legislators and other statewide officials time to be able to sort of take real responsibility for this. The real question will be, will this lead to reform efforts, right? So here's a number of problems that come up that might be doable. In fact, the reason I know that they've come up is because they came up in 2011 when the last time this kind of thing happened, where in the summer there was shortages. It wasn't a cold weather thing. It was a warm weather thing. But the specific reform efforts from the legislature identified some things that needed to be done. Number one, they needed to have a higher adequacy reliability standard or kind of reserve management requirement. They need to have more winterizing of the facilities. The other is, this has come up lately, and that is that you have a lot of folks who are living out of state. And so what some members, including Carol Alvarado here from Houston, are saying is that we shouldn't have people from out of state on the board. So this is ripe for change, but that change means that you have to have sustained attention from the governor specifically, and you've got to have a legislature that's willing to kind of put aside the sort of partisan blinders. The reason this stuff didn't pass in 2011 was that there was such a contentious political session that no air could get through except the stuff that was like, we're at each other's throats, right? And the blood sport of that moment. So can we get past that? Can we make the solution needed to be able to reform and have this not happen again?
Well, and this thing is about, you know, public policy. It's not about partisanship. It's not about anything. You cannot have, for the love of God, successful small business owners, right? You cannot have a sustainable economic growth and have the Texas growth miracle expand to the four corners of the world if you don't have these basic things under control. I mean, it's simple, rational, you know, economic thought,
right?
Like business vote with their feet, right?
Yeah.
We saw Tesla said, you know what? I'm going out of California. Tesla can move itself whenever he gets back to Houston.
Right.
They can go to Montana.
Yeah.
Or Hawaii.
Yeah.
Or, well, maybe not Hawaii.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, it would be nice.
It seems nice there, yeah. Frankly, any place seems nice compared to the frozen tundra of, like, Hoth that we live on. But nevertheless, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, and the other question is, like, you know, will we get sustained effort from the governor? He has not followed through on a lot of things that he's talked about. So homeless policy in Austin kind of dropped the ball in that. In efforts to be able to make some common sense gun reform after Sutherland Springs, that didn't really go anywhere. So they need him to be on point. The good news, I think, is that the leg is in session. So typically it's the case that either legislation passes over several consecutive sessions because of a slow burn of a policy issue that finally gets like the attention, or a sudden bang. And we are definitely experiencing a sudden bang. So I think if there's any good news in this, is that the leg is there and they know that people are suffering. And this is that moment to be able to make that reform. So in a way, it kind of, you know, lights a fire. Again, using heat analogies instead of cold analogies to get things going. And that's what the state needs.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, we're going to see if that is going to be the case or it's not going to be the case. Certainly, for example, county judges are pressured. City mayors are also pressured. And they don't have zero control.
Right.
I mean, center point energy, right? Zero control.
Right.
They're just the guys that distribute the energy from their big thingies, whatever they call distribution centers, right? The ones with the spirals that you see on the freeway to your home. Period.
I thought you were an energy expert.
Well, I mean, I have a lot. I mean, they cannot even storage, right? Yeah. Energy.
Yeah.
Like they're not allowed to do that by aircraft because this is the energy market, is buy and sell.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's see and figure it out. But, you know, the invisible hand was not very well, maybe it was invisible because we didn't feel it, how the market reacted to itself. So,
right.
I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. In a couple of days, we're going to start seeing if this issue is going to move or not. And obviously, we're going to be keeping an eye on it. Yeah. So that's it for this week. We hope that this winter nightmare instead of winter wonderland or whatever it is ends up pretty quickly. Party Politics is recording the George P. Geer Performance Studio, Houston Public Media. Stay safe.
Special thanks to our producer, Troy Schultz. Big kudos to our web and graphics team here at Houston Public Media. And finally, of course, always thanks to our audio engineer, Todd, the Snowman Hulslander. You can find this podcast at any place you find podcasts, and be sure to like and subscribe and rate and review it.
Remember, this show airs every Friday night at 10:30 p.m. on News 88.7. I'm Jeronimo Cortina.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse. We'll see you next week.